Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Penn. And I am very grateful to have you with me on this 17th day of January 2021 as we take a look at how do I love doing these how do I things. What I do is I take emails that I thought were very, very important, and then I kind of extract from them the core of the subject and then put them together in a show for you, and I hope that this helps you. My intent is to help you understand the blocks that you may have to being authentic in an authentic spiritual practice, what it really means to progress, and then maybe to offer solutions to all of this for you, to help you understand that it can be done, but it's going to require sacrifice. And I want to say this to you right off the bat. This has to be really important. Everybody asks me, why do you talk like you do? Why do you speak about things the way you do? No, nobody does. I don't sit here and mamby-pamby it like many presenters do. I don't give you philosophy or theology. What I try to give you is a straightforward insight into what it means to be authentic and what it means to reach the authentic. Some people call it God. Some people will call it love. You can call it whatever you want. Lao Tzu called it the Tao. Buddha called it love. Jesus called it God. It doesn't really matter to me what you call it. But what does matter to me is that you don't make a philosophy out of it, because if we make a philosophy out of all of this, we won't do it. We will continue to work from our primitive DNA and our genetic inherited inspirations, we'll say. They're actually not. They're forms of mind and body that make us sick, that create depression and misunderstanding and bias. Racially, socially, personally, there's all sorts of things in that genetic bag of ours. And what I try to do is help you understand what you're up against and not to be discouraged by it, but to move on. Just keep moving on. The sacrifices that have to be made are made in love, in the context of a great love that lives within you. And everything in this lifetime is worth sacrificing for love. And I mean everything. I'm not talking about the sacrifice of hurting another person, of course. I'm talking about giving up my traits, giving up my genetic instincts, giving up my desires, my biases especially. And when I'm willing to do all of this, a new life begins to emerge. And I think a lot of people just don't really want that kind of new life. They just want the life they have and struggle through, believing because they don't have any spiritual ilk in them, that that's all there is in this world, is what they're experiencing in their biology, their psychology, and their emotionality. So there you are. That's really what it's all about. And I want you to know what my motive is. So when I'm answering these questions, you kind of get an insight. All right, the first question comes from Ronald. He does not tell me where he lives. He gave me a long email about being highly competitive and some of the things that he goes through, some of the things he does that are, in his opinion, self-destructive or get him what he wants, but at the cost of having a reputation with people that basically is that they don't want to be around him. So he asked, how do I stop being so competitive in a competitive world? The only world, Ronald, that makes us competitive is our own inner world. That's really all it's about. Now, how insecure am I in myself? That's where the competitiveness lies. People don't want to be disturbed. They don't want to look at their life for what it is and try to understand what this livingness is really all about. They are insecure about themselves, about their abilities. They're selfish. They're prideful. They want to totally get what they want, when they want it, as they want it. They want to stand out. They want to get the accoutrements of people loving them, maybe looking at them as special. Huh? That's a big one. We want accolades for everything we do. Everything we do. Everything has to have an accolade. I am this, I am that. So when we're seeking all of this in our life, we're missing the point of view of our living. We're missing the meaning, the substance, the significance of what our real living is all about, which is love. So the first thing you're going to have to do, Ronald, is look inside of your insecurities. What is it that makes you insecure? What is it that you don't trust about yourself? Maybe you're pitching your idea of yourself against the idea you have of another person. And when we do something like that, and all of us have, I've done it, everybody's done it, we sit there and we oftentimes either demean ourselves to such a degree that it is almost impossible to think that we could do anything well, or that we aggrandize ourselves to such a point that we think our poop don't stink. So we have all of this stuff going back and forth. And so being competitive is really the search and the fight for adoration. And that's really all it is, comfort and adoration, thinking that I can fix my insecurities as a person by being something that competitively makes me feel like I've done something that is deserving. Let's put it that way. I don't think we think in terms of nobility. The antidote to this is you're going to have to explore your insecurities. This all comes from genetics. And if you look at your genetics, you look at your father, your mother, if you look around, you will see that a lot of what you're going through, a lot of the things that are difficult in your life may have a lot to do with not feeling good enough, having low self-esteem, those kind of things. If you start looking at it from that point of view, you will see. I have noticed in all human beings who think that they have succeeded or think that they have done well in and of the world, that they think in their own minds that somehow they've upped their self-image, their feelings about themselves, their low self-esteem. And this is a Greg Penn opinion based only on 50 years of working with people in intimate settings and counseling, spiritual work. None of those people ever accelerated consciousness or found consciousness or awakened through consciousness. None of them. They're competitive to the day they die. They fight and scream for attention. They think that whatever it is that is important to them, be it in business, in their careers, in their children, in anything, that if they can excel and do better than their parents or better than those people they think are doing the same thing around them, that all of a sudden they are the best and they have shall we say, proven the point that they are better or different than maybe their predecessors or whatever. It's all baloney. It is. You will never, ever find the meaning of your life by fighting for your existence here on earth through competitive ideals and beliefs and theories. It just won't happen. So if you want to stay competitive, and you think that is the only way you're going to build your self-esteem and you're going to get the adoration of your family, your friends, whatever, then go to it. But it's futile. We have so many lessons to learn here on earth about ourselves. I mean, we have so many They're all very, very, very difficult lessons, and yet I find them to be very simple lessons, and to drop them. We will cut our nose off, literally, to spite our face. We will, as people. So everything we basically do is based in the idea of how do I get ahead and how do I get what I want. And it takes numerous hundreds of lifetimes, in my opinion, for people to get over that. You know, to be honest with you, I appeal to my students not to do these things, to find, you know, the presence of love within them over the need for or the obsession to be better than other people, but it falls on deaf ears. They hear it and they nod politely and go, okay, I'll do that, but they don't really do it. And it's the crux of the matter of their own life. It really is. And I can't get them to change. You can't motivate people in authentic spiritual work. What you can do with people is show them the way. And if they have the ilk, if they have the natural tendencies, if they've had enough of the way they are, and they realize they've had enough of the way they are, then something can happen. But until then, nothing's going to happen. Absolutely nothing. It's going to be ugly, ugly, ugly all the way through their lifetime. They'll be fighting and scratching and gnawing at things. And no matter how they achieve whatever it is they thought that they could achieve or would achieve that would make them feel better, they don't. They don't. Because in the end, nothing has been achieved. The only thing that is achieved in the course of a lifetime are those things that you can take with you through death. Ronald, I hope that helped you. I do. Although I'm sure it didn't. But at least the seed is planted. Please forgive me. Namaste. And just say, okay, I'll do that. No. Okay, the next one comes from Linda in Los Angeles. She writes us often. I want to thank her. How do I become a better person in the upcoming year? Linda, I have no idea, Linda. I don't know what a better person is. Everybody asks me about, you know, at the turn of the year, how do I become a better about this and that? And one of the major one that everybody goes to is how do I become a better person? I don't know what you do. I don't know what you even think of as a better person. What is a better person? And what's that going to get you in the first place? You know, socially, are you talking about it? Because if you are, that runs the gamut from, let's say, one social group to another social group to another, what a better person is. I don't know what that is. To you, I don't know. And can you make a better out of a person? You know what I mean? Can you actually make something better out of another person? I don't think so. I think you can augment people's ideas about themselves a little bit, not much. You can point out to them, and you have to have leverage. See, if I point out to you, if you do this, you won't get that. If you do that, you might get this. That's all leverage, and that's what people want. They don't want authentic change. They don't want personal transformation. They want leverage, something that they can use to get what they want, and they don't have to put any authenticity into it. All they have to do is behave a certain way. And if you behave a certain way, then it starts to happen. You know, I get what I want. Oh my, I must be very smart, or I must be very powerful, or everybody thinks they want the power, you know, the power and the glory forever about whatever it is they want, and they think that they can have it. Just, there are so many problems with being human. And the trouble with the human is that it only promotes the human. It does not bring you to the divine that lives within you. So you asked me, how can you become a better person? You know, I have to say this. I have gotten numerous emails on the basic same subject. How do I become the person I should be and all of that? Maybe it's about becoming silent. Maybe the calm abiding of the silence that lives within you could be the answer to everything in your life and everything you're asking me. Maybe it's not about being a better person. Maybe it's about being a person of silence. How about that? A person who can live in the silence and not be threatened by it or not feel like they're being cheated by it or whatever. A lot of people like to make a lot of noise in this world, and that noise becomes the music of their life. And that's the way they live, in this noise, and they think noise is music. They don't even understand the vibrations of music, the basic feeling of compassion, of love that the silence, the music of the silence can bring you. They want this catharsis. And, you know, I'm all for music being cathartic. I think that's very important. But the problem is that the ego attributes it to abilities that make it feel like it's superior, or that it's letting go of its ambitions and prohibitions and all of that, make it more suitable, more desirable, more legitimate, as it were. And it really doesn't. You have to, at some point, give up the idea of thinking that catharsis is the only way. Catharsis, I use in my spiritual work with my students. Catharsis is a very important part of it, because they always re-ingest everything that they shouldn't re-ingest. So it goes on and on and on like that. So I teach them how to let go of their pain, their suffering, their anger. I give them all sorts of catharsis to do that, breath work. But in a way, they like doing it. In a way, they don't, because what comes up out of catharsis is something that they didn't count on living within them. They're embarrassed by the kind of crap that lives inside their heads and their bodies as genetic functions, and they just don't want to do that. People don't want to explore what's going on. You know, it isn't about outer space. It's not the Star Trek, Star Wars thing. It's the inner world, the inner world of a person that needs to be explored. And very few people have the intent or the stratosphere of that. They just don't go into it. They won't go into that world. It scares them to think what they're capable of, and it's embarrassing to think that they turned out to be this person. When you find something within you that you can't calculate, find something within you that you didn't know was there, like the degree of your anger and your vengeance and your pride, the degree that you would go to, like an animal, in, you know, finding out that you really are, as a body, an animal and nothing less and nothing more, and then getting involved in understanding what extreme that animal will go to comfort itself, to find enough money to survive or whatever. Boy, it gets hairy. It gets very difficult. And most people quit. They just quit. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to, you know, go along and to get along, and that's all it's going to be for me. And I don't want to know all this other stuff, because it's embarrassing. And people have an idea about who they are. Everybody has this picture of themselves in their brain about who they are and what they are. So they take this little snapshot of their brain, in their brain, and of themselves, and they trot around all of their lifetime thinking that everybody else sees what they envision themselves to be. The king has no clothes. We find at the end, when we're really working on ourselves, we've been trotting around touting things that just weren't true. And there you are. It can be unnerving and embarrassing, but the thing that is most important is if you're forgiving, it all doesn't matter. You have to forgive yourself. You have to forgive the part of you that did all that, loves all that, succumbed to all that. And the way you do it is through love, humility. Like Jesus said in the Beatitudes, meekness. And you, to do that, you have to be poor in spirit, as he said. And that's just not something that the general public is going to do. There you are, Linda. Kind of went around the horn there a little bit, but there you are. Don't be a better person. Be an authentic person. Be so authentic that you seek the beauty of your soul and you find the sacredness of your life. That's what you need to do. Please forgive me. Namaste. And the last question. This comes from Camille. Camille does not tell me where she lives. How do I give when I hate to give, Camille? I'm laughing because everybody feels that way. They want, you know, I should give. I really should. If I'm, yeah, I should give. But the deal is, people hate to give because they live in the mathematics of, if I give $10 away, I'm $10 poorer. You know, that's their attitude. You know, their giving is in proportion to the state of sacredness. Giving is in proportion to the state of forgiveness. Giving is in proportion to the quality of my state of love. That's what it is. And when you look at it, you think, well, I don't want to give away the farm. So that's where people live. They live in the ideas and the ideals of what lives within them. And money brings out the worst in people because it taps the whole DNA thing within them. And once that's been tapped and survival becomes important, that's where it all goes, to survival. So you're going to have to, in a way, confront your survival, your fear of survival. That's what you're going to have to do. And you're going to have to ask yourself, why am I afraid I won't survive? Every student I have has said this to me. I'm afraid I'm going to be penniless, thrown out in the street, and die. That every single student I have ever had has said something similar to that. And that's why they're afraid to give. But they're not afraid to steal or take. They'll steal in a way. The stealing comes in, I will take what I can get and any more than I can get, and I won't tell anybody what I'm doing and nobody will see it, and I'll just grab what I want. And they think there are no repercussions for that, no consequence for that. There's consequence for everything. I am a teacher of consequence to help you understand why things happen the way they do. So there you are. That's why I can't get you over this disease. I try with my students as well, and nothing I do ever works. It just doesn't. If there is a way to snub a spiritual principle or to ignore it or to abuse it, I have found that humankind will definitely do that no matter what. They will find a way to make things ugly. And until we're done with that, nothing's going to change. I got to go. I want to thank you for your beautiful questions, all of you. And Camille, thank you for your beautiful question. Be back on the air next week. Please forgive me, eh? Namaste.